is Frank Yeager, and listening to MMA Weekly with Damon Morin.
Nick Kalikas here for this week's UFC 132 betting update, brought to you by BetOnFighting.com. At the main event, bantamweight gold is on the line as champion Dominic Cruz takes on top contender Uriah Faber. Cruz enters the fight as a slight favorite at minus 130 odds. In the co-main event, MMA legend Wanderlei Silva makes his long-awaited return and faces middleweight slugger Chris Leben. Silva heads into this fight as a minus 175 favorite over Leben. For the rest of this weekend's UFC 132 odds, make sure you head on over to BetOnFighting.com, the best place to get caught up on all the latest fight odds and much more. BetOnFighting.com, where the MMA line originates.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children.
Hey, this is Kenny Florian. This is Uriah Faber. This is BJ Penn.
This is George St. Pierre.
This is The Voice, Michael Ciavello. You're listening to MMA Weekly Radio with Damon Martin.
Welcome to the big show, people. I am Damon Martin, rolling back here on Wednesday afternoon. God, the week's flying by. I kind of forget what day of the week it is. Missed Monday because of travel back from Pittsburgh, and then you miss a day, and the entire week is shot. But it is Wednesday. We are back. We got a great show tonight. We're not going to waste a lot of time. We're going to get to our interviews here in just a few moments. Tito Ortiz joins us on the show tonight, as well as his opponent, Ryan Darth Bader. We're also going to be talking to Ryan's partner, teammate, and partner, Aaron Simpson, as well as an interview with British fighter Andre Winner, who is on the UFC 132 card. So a stacked show tonight. We're going to kick things off with Tito Ortiz here in just a few moments. Before I get to that, of course, the biggest news of the day yesterday was the situation surrounding Nate Marquardt. He made his announcement on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, talking about what the reason was he was unable to fight at UFC on Versus 4. Essentially, it was hormone replacement therapy. He had low testosterone. We've heard that before from Chael Sonnen recently. That's been another fighter that has undergone the same kind of thing. He had low testosterone. He had hormone replacement therapy. His testosterone levels were raised higher. And next thing you know, they were not low enough for him to be approved by the PA commission. And he was removed from the fight. Now, Nate was very forthcoming, and it seemed like he was very honest. The reaction has been twofold. You know, the reaction about the reaction from everyone towards Nate has been that he's been honest. You know, he seemed forthcoming. He seemed very open about the whole situation. You know, he was brought to tears a couple times. Obviously, very upset about the whole thing. On the flip side, the opinion of a lot of people is there's still something else going on. Not that there's something he's hiding, but why Dana White would get so angry with Nate on that event or during that event, and where he hasn't been as angry with guys like Chael Sonnen or Thiago Silva, when they've tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. What was the underlying cause? What was the underlying reason behind Nate being fired and other athletes not getting the same treatment? And I think that's been the big question a lot of people are asking, and myself included. Listen, I hate to play conspiracy theorist. I really do. I really don't want to play conspiracy theorist. But it seems like there's a little bit more to this story than what we're getting as far as what went on backstage. Now, I'm not saying that Nate's withholding anything. I'm just wondering if the situation escalated in the back as far as when Nate was officially told he couldn't fight. Maybe he thought, you know, he assured them that the levels would be lower. He said there's no way that they're going to come back. You know, he had cut weight and everything. And then, you know, possibly he found out at that point that he wasn't going to fight. And it was a surprise to him. And obviously Dana was angry because he feels like maybe he was misled about the situation from, you know, Nate Marquardt. Maybe he felt that, you know, Nate was withholding information, you know, trying to find a way to fight, and it didn't happen. I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to play too much conspiracy theorist because the facts are the facts, and the facts that I know are what Nate said today. He seemed very open and honest about it. And, you know, I listen, I'm not best friends with Nate, but you know, I've interviewed the guy, you know, on and off for the past, you know, 5 or 6 years. He's always been a very nice guy, very upfront guy. You know, he's not, you know, he doesn't strike me as a guy who is saying things to get publicity or saying things to, you know, put his own word out there, put his own name out there above anybody else. You know, he's just a hardworking guy and a very nice guy. Like I said, I've never, you know, run into Nate and him not be a nice guy. He's always a, you know, real accommodating guy with interviews, things like that. So, you know, I, that's only 3 interviews. I don't know the guy outside of that. I'm not hanging out with him and going out to dinner with him, hang out at his house. But I do know guys that, you know, stand up for him, guys like Elliot Marshall, who I know very well. And Elliot says that, you know, Nate's a good guy and he believes what Nate says. And listen, you know, he was very forthcoming. He was very, very open and honest. But it's an ongoing issue with this hormone replacement therapy treatment in MMA, these low testosterone cases. You know, this is the second big one we've had in the past few months, with Chael Sonnen being the other major one, that, you know, people are going to raise the question and wonder why and how and what's going on here. You know, testosterone being lower sometimes is a cause of anabolic steroid use, abuse. You know, that can actually cause your testosterone to drop or lower. Another statement that Nate made today was talking about when you're dehydrated, like cutting weight, that your testosterone will be up because your blood is at a lower concentration, which is not true. You know, basically, when you are dehydrated, testosterone levels actually go down. That, you know, that's actually been proven. It was actually in the 2006 case with Floyd Landis, when he won the Tour de France and was under accusations from the anti-doping agency. That was his defense, because of dehydration, his testosterone levels were higher, and the anti-doping agency basically said, no, that's not possible. Your testosterone levels would actually be lower if your dehydration was going on. So, again, I'm not accusing Nate of anything. I think he was very honest. I think he was very forthcoming. I think he was telling to the best of his ability, and to see him get emotional like that, I don't think that was fake. You know, I don't think he was trying to fake it for the cameras or try to make us have sympathy for him. You know, the guy lost his job. That's, you know, will he get his job back? Will he get a second shot in the UFC? I don't know. You know, I think guys that have done worse are still employed by the UFC. I mean, listen, you know, a lot of guys have gone through this, look at Sean Sherk. Now, listen, I'm not pointing fingers at Sean Sherk. Sean Sherk's not a bad guy. But here's a guy who tested positive for steroids in a title fight, main event fight of a UFC event, comes out and says he didn't do it. He didn't do it. You know, I didn't do it. He says he produced a lot of information to prove that he didn't do it. But fact is he still got convicted, tried and convicted. And, you know, he's still an employee of the UFC. Now, again, I'm not trying to say a bad thing about Sean Sherk. I'm just saying he was a guy who was, you know, tested positive, fought in a main event, and is still employed by the UFC. You know, you look at, you know, there's other guys. I mean, listen, we could name all the guys that have tested positive for steroids, you know, Thiago Silva down the line, because he's one of the most recent ones. But the fact is guys have tested positive before, and they're still employed by the UFC, Chael Sonnen. But fact is that, you know, Nate got fired, and I think that's where the conspiracy theory comes in of why. What is the situation? And I don't know. You know, the only person that can answer that, and hopefully we'll have that answer later this week, will be Dana White. He's the only one that can truly say what went on in the back and why he felt compelled, or why he felt the situation was severe enough that he had to fire Nate Marquardt. What did Nate Marquardt do that was so erroneous that he deserved to be fired? That is the key to this whole thing. Dana's got to tell his side of why. Now that the truth's out there as far as what he was taken off the card for, what was Dana's reasoning? What was Dana's mindset as to why he fired Nate Marquardt last Sunday or last Saturday? That's the only thing we're waiting on. And hopefully Dana will shed some light on that this week, now that Nate's story has come out. We'll have to wait and see. Will Nate get another shot in the UFC? That's a bigger question. I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that. Right now, no. You know, I think he's going to have to fight outside the organization for a fight, maybe two. And then maybe they'll bring him back. I don't know. I think he deserves to be there. But like I said, this is a bigger issue that's got to be solved. You know, this is a bigger problem that is ongoing, and, you know, they need to fix it. And they need to solve this issue before they have Nate back, or anybody in this case. You know, they need to figure out what's going on and, you know, speak to the commissions and get all this solved before he comes back and fights in the octagon again. Because we do not want MMA to become synonymous with things like performance-enhancing drugs the way cycling has. You know, I'm not a cycling fan, but what do I know about cycling? Every time I hear something about cycling, it's about somebody doping. It's about somebody, you know, getting busted. It's about steroid accusations. It's about, you know, the anti-doping agency. I very rarely hear anything else about the cycling world. Now, obviously, cycling is not anywhere near the popularity on a mainstream scale that, you know, MMA is, but... You know, we don't want to become synonymous with that. Now, I'm not saying one case. I'm not saying Nate Marquardt's case is going to lead to that, okay? I'm not saying his case is going to lead to, you know, a widespread panic in the industry that we're a dirty sport. I'm just saying what we don't want is to this to become an ongoing thing. You know, Chael Sonnen was one recently. Now it's Nate Marquardt. What we don't want this to become a trend. So we got to nip it in the bud. We got to put it to bed. I'm not saying Nate deserved to lose his job over it. I'm just saying that whatever the situation is, we got to handle it. That way it doesn't pop up again. That way these situations don't come back to haunt us down the road and people think of MMA as a dirty sport. In the big picture. All right, we got a great show tonight. We're going to kick things off here right now with our first interview. He is, of course, the former UFC light heavyweight champion. He may be fighting for his career this Saturday night at UFC 132. Let's talk to the Huntington Beach bad boy, Tito Ortiz. MMA Weekly Radio, Damon Martin back here with Tito Ortiz. Tito, it's been a little while, but welcome back to the show, man. We always appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, Tito, obviously, fight is just a couple days away now. We know it's you and Ryan Bader. How is training? How is everything health-wise getting ready for this fight?
Well, training's gone really, really well. You know, I feel strong. I'm in shape. You know, my mental capacity is at its highest peak right now, and I feel really, really good and capable of this fight to get my hand raised.
We know that, you know, Ryan is a very tough fighter, and you know, despite the fact that you haven't had a win in a little while, you wanted to face nothing but the best. Is Ryan Bader in that same line of opponents, you feel?
I feel so. You know, he's the top four guy in the world. You know, he's really a tough competitor. He has, you know, strong hands, great wrestling skills. And, you know, it just seems like every one of my competitors just keep going up and up and up, and it shows that I'm able to compete with the best guys in the world.
Now, let's backtrack, if we could, a little bit to post-fight with Matt Hamill, because at that point, you know, Dana, you know, said, you know, we're going to have to wait and see on Tito and, you know, what was next for you. Can you walk us through the timeline or what exactly happened, your conversations with Dana and the Fertittas that they gave you this fight?
What do we mean? Talking about prior to Hamill or after Hamill?
After Hamill.
Well, you know, I really came down to them coming to me and saying that we think it's time for you to retire. And I pretty much was speechless for the first couple minutes. I was like, are you serious right now? You guys have me competing against the best guys in the world. Look at my last four fights. Yes, I haven't had a win since 2006, but let's go back in history. Okay, I fought Rashad Evans to a draw, and I thought I ended up winning the fight. It wasn't me. As they said, I held on to the fence for the second time, with my fingers just scraped across the fence, and they took a point away. I would have won that fight. He goes on to win the light heavyweight world title. I fight Machida once again, a fight that I thought that I shouldn't. I probably could have gone either way if I would have kept the triangle and I would have choked him out or been unconscious and a little mistake I made. He goes on to win a light heavyweight world title. I fight Forrest Griffin after having back surgery, two-level fusion to my lower back. Most athletes don't come back after having surgery that major. And it was supposed to be against Mark Coleman. It was supposed to be a warm-up fight, and it wasn't a warm-up fight. It was against Forrest Griffin, who was a former world champion, and I thought I'd beat him in the 2-1 round decision, but they gave it to him in a split decision, which was I thought I won the fight. Dana said he thought I won the fight, and then all of a sudden I have to have neck surgery, and I get neck surgery on top of my back surgery, and they want me to fight Matt Hamill, who's a tough, tough wrestler, a tough guy who's had a 5-0 record at the time of his last five fights. And I'm fighting the top guys in the world. And I had to really pretty much tell them, why are you asking me to retire? I'm not getting knocked out unconscious. I'm not getting submitted. I'm not getting dominated. But I'm fighting the top guys that you want me to fight against. But now you guys are going to retire me? I mean, was this like a negotiation tactic? I mean, I don't know. So I took it on the fact of, okay, I'll take a big pay cut, and I'll compete against anybody you guys want me to. So I was supposed to fight, Minotauro and Nogueira, and that was a fight I picked. You know, Dana says, well, let me, after the conversation we had about me finally just saying, okay, I get one more fight out of it, they said, well, let me find out an opponent for you. So I was thinking in my mind, who would be the best guy for me? And I first thing came up to my state of mind was Minotauro and Nogueira. And I told Dana that, and he said, done, let's do it. And something happened, and I got cut. You know, I got 22 stitches on my eyebrow. I had a back concussion due to a headbutt, a serious headbutt. I was thrown up for about a good week and a half, and Dana still wanted me to fight. But 3 weeks out of a fight, I couldn't take 3 weeks off and compete against guys at someone at Nogueira's level, and I had to pull out of the fight. And that was only the second fight in my whole career that I ever pulled out due to injury. And a lot of fans got to understand that, because as the bad press and bad news that comes about is Tito pulls out of fights because of injury. BS. I fight no matter what. I fight every one of my fights, injured or not. After I pulled out of the Chuck Liddell fight, it was due to a ruptured disc in my neck and bones, spurs that are pressing on my spinal cord. And then I pulled out of the Nogueira fight due to 22 stitches in my head, not 12, not 10, not 2, 22, and a back concussion. And I just want to look out for my best health, my future as a fighter, as a father, and as a businessman.
Now, let me ask you, Tito, because when you hear that, when they say, you know, we want you to retire, not only shock, but how much motivation does that give you? Because, you know, you've been a top guy in the sport for a lot of years. And like you said, none of those fights that you lost were you blown out in. But how much motivation does that give you when you hear somebody say, you know, we want you to retire? Because I got to imagine that they kind of put a spur in your butt a little bit.
It did. You know, to tell you the truth, 100%, it kind of just kind of deflated me a little bit. I was like, these guys think of this like this, and I kind of was just, wasn't motivated. It took me a little bit, you know. 3 months ago, I wasn't motivated. After they told me that, I was just like, I don't know, it was hard for me to get in the gym. I wasn't motivated. But then all of a sudden, my fans who follow me on Twitter and on my website, punishment.com, and motivate me and push me. The trainers I have now, you know, Jason Perillo and Mike Giovanni, have really motivated me to become a little better fighter, I think, to get that hunger back, to get that motivation back to go in and fight my heart out. You know, a lot of fans who Twitter me and say, you know, how much I've inspired them in their lives. Well, I don't want to let any of those people down. So I put in, you know, my 8 weeks of camp really, really hard. I'm in great shape right now. My weight's where I wanted to be. My wrestling where I wanted to be. Take down defense, you know, my boxing skills. Everything is, my timing feels good, man. I'm ready to go to war. You know, I put myself through a grindstone, and this show my sharpening skills.
Now, obviously, you know, the focus with this fight, you know, it's very serious because of that last conversation. So I got to ask you the question, Tito, is this a make or break fight for you? If you win this fight, obviously, that's a huge deal. But do you look at this fight as a make or break fight for your career?
Of course, for my career, for my fight career, you know, for everything I put into it, I'm going to put everything on the line. Hopefully Bader thinks that I'm going to be a pushover because he's in a big lot of trouble. I can't make decisions for my future. Only Dana can. Only the UFC can. You know, there's nowhere else for me to go. You know, there's no more Strikeforce. There's no more Pride. You know, there's no more WEC. Everything is bought by the UFC, and they're doing a great job by promoting of one of the best brands in the world, and that's Ultimate Fighting Championship. I've been fighting for the UFC since day one, since my career began back in 1997, and I don't plan on going anywhere else. Dana thinks it's time for me to bounce and go somewhere else, or thinks I need to hang up my gloves. I don't feel like it. But if they feel like it, I have no choice, man. There's not really much of a choice I can do besides fight my ass off on Saturday night and get my hand raised to let everyone know that I'm not going anywhere.
You know, when you talk about those last, you know, few fights, you mentioned Machida, the Rashad Evans fight, which, you know, again, I agree you won if it wasn't for the point deduction. You look at the fight with Forrest Griffin, very close fight. The Hamill fight was probably the one of the, you know, the, again, closer fight, obviously maybe a little more decisive than, let's say, the Griffin fight, but very close in all those fights. But do you feel like you figured out what you need to do to push you over the edge in this fight?
Yeah, 100%. That's being healthy, man. You know, coming off of back surgery, neck surgery, people aren't going to be normal. To be a competitive fighter against these top guys in the world who aren't injured, it's hard to do. It just takes time of positive reinforcement from a company that's going to be backing you since you backed them since day one. It's going to be fights that you got the right fights to progress as a fighter. You know, I think it really comes down to motivation and the same factor of having the aggression to go on each fight with the confidence of knowing that you could win. This sport of mixed martial arts, confidence is a good 60% of everything, man. And I think it really comes down to that. You go guys who win over and over again, and the confidence just boosts and boosts and boosts. We're all the same level as competitors. We're all the same level as fighters. It's just who comes into the fight with a mind focus of knowing that they're going to win with the motivation and the confidence that it's not going to stop them.
Absolutely. Now, to that point, let me ask you with this one, health-wise, how is your body feeling going into this weekend?
I feel really, really good, man. Let me tell you. You know what I mean? For the first time in a long time, I feel healthy. Not having any back problems. My neck hasn't been bothering me. You know, I've been sparring as much as possible. You know, I've been putting in the road work, putting in the stuff I need to do to compete. And I feel good. I feel motivated. You know, all my home drama's gone. You know, I've been really paying attention to my fight career right now, and that's all I've been working on. You know, it's just there's a lot of outside things that happen that I kind of put my heart and soul into, and you know, you kind of get let down, but at the same time, you kind of get motivated behind those things of being a great father, being a great competitor, and a businessman, and trying to hold and balance and juggle all those balls at the same time. And it's difficult sometimes, you know. I want to be the greatest father possible, you know, I want to be the greatest fighter possible and the greatest businessman possible, but to juggle all those at the same time, it's difficult. And to have a relationship at the same time, it's difficult. And when it's on a major pedestal as it is, you know, I'm underneath the microscope on everything I do. No matter what I do, when I do it, everybody knows what I'm doing, how I'm doing it. And it sucks sometimes. But at the same time, it's one of those things that it drives me to be a better man.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to dive too much into your personal life, Tito, but I got to ask the question. I mean, how are things in your personal life, and how much of a distraction was, I mean, you know, we saw some of this stuff unfold on Twitter, and again, I don't want to get too deep into it, but I got to ask, was it a distraction? Have you been able to put that out of your mind as you get ready? Because this was right in the middle of your fight camp.
Yeah, it was. It was a big, 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 big factor, huge factor, so huge that I literally put it out of sight, out of mind. Conversations don't happen. All I pay attention to now is just fight and train, see my boys, and that's it, man. I've really been to myself.
Yeah.
For once in my life, for once in my career, I have really been selfish and been paying attention strict to myself. So that's how much this career and this fight game matters to me. I mean, I care about how fans think about me, of how great of a champion I was. I care about how fans, you know, think about me of being a great father and, you know, great motivation in their lives of being a great competitor. And I don't want to sell them short or sell myself short by not giving 100%. And when I go into the cage and I fight on Saturday night, I know I gave them that 100% during training. And I can say I'm happy right now. You know, I'm focused. I'm physically and mentally focused to compete. You know, I have a lot of naysayers to shut up. And I just got to have a lot of fans who supported me to show that, you know, I'm very thankful for them. And if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to get in the gym every single day.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you, though, because you had a book come out. We've talked about that on the radio show before. You were very, very forthcoming about things like, you know, drugs and different things you went on through your life, your first marriage. And then with your relationship with Jenna, it was a very public, you know, relationship. You're both very, obviously, big celebrities. But do you have any regrets of living such a public life? I mean, do you ever look back and think, man, I wish, you know, I wish maybe I had done it differently because, you know, while you are one of the most famous fighters in the world, there are drawbacks to that, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I can't control anybody else's life. And, you know, with Jenna, I can't control her at all. She does her own thing. You know, I take back maybe some of the things I put on Twitter with my personal life. I shouldn't have done that. And I'll never do that again. You'll never see anything about my relationship, my family, or anything. You know, maybe my son's going to win the world win the state title again in wrestling. That's about as far as I'll go on that. But it's strictly for business on Twitter, you know. Mostly in pretty much all my interviews or anything I ever do, I'll never bring up personal life out of that. You know, I learn from mistakes. I'm human. I make mistakes, and I'm going to learn from these mistakes. And I learn from others' mistakes, and hopefully other people can learn from my mistakes. But at the end of the day, you know, I made a few mistakes. You can't control other people, but you can only control your own destiny, and I'm going to continue doing that.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about this fight, because I had a chance to talk to Ryan Bader the other day, and the thing he told me was, you know, he had three guys on a list of legends in the sport that he wanted to face one of them before he was done: Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, and you. And that's why he asked to fight for you, because, you know, you were a legend in his mind, and you were one of the three guys he figured as an icon of this sport. It seems like there's a lot of respect between you and Ryan. You know, there's not a lot of trash talk, and I'll be honest, he didn't say a bad word about you. How do you feel? How do you react to something like that?
I react as I've always been acting since I signed the contract. I respect Ryan. I think he's a great competitor. I think he's a great fighter. And I think he's an up-and-coming fighter himself. And maybe one day he might be champion. But on Saturday night, he's going to come up short. You know, he says I'm a stepping stone. You know, I've heard him talk a little bit trash about me. And he's going to be mistaken. You know, he thinks I'm over the hill or whatever. You can understand. I just turned 36 years old. I'm still young, man. I still got the hunger. I still got the drive. And once I grab a hold of him, he realizes how strong I am. I think when I shut down his first couple takedowns, he's going to realize that, oh, shit, maybe I did get myself what I didn't think I was going to be into because I asked for Tito Ortiz. And I'm here to fight, man. And Bader's a tough opponent. He's a top five in the world, and I'm going to take this in a stride. I'm going to give my heart and soul. I'm going to entertain and do what I do best and try to kick his ass.
Now, on the flip side of that, on the mental side of this, one of the only, you know, I mean, Ryan is a phenomenal fighter, but I guess if you're going to have a criticism about him from his last fight, his one loss to John Jones, you know, it seemed like the moment got to him a little bit. You know, that was a shot, you know, title shot was on the line, the winner got Shogun, maybe they heard about it in the back, I don't know, but it just seemed like he didn't look all the way in there, and that was really his first, you know, really, really high-profile fight in the UFC. You've been in a million of them. You've been in title fights. You defended your title. You know what it's like. Do you think you'll be able to tell in the opening moments of this fight if he's really there mentally?
100%. You know, let's see if he can handle the pressure. This fight's gonna be different for me. I'm not gonna hold back and sit back and pick my points. I'm gonna come in how I used to come in, and that's aggressive and push the tempo. You know, I get taken down, I'm gonna get right back up. He takes me down, I'm gonna elbow in his face. It's going to be from the beginning bell until the end bell. I'm going to give 100%. I've been in some of the top biggest fights, pay-per-view-wise, on Spike TV in the world. No fights have been bigger than the fights I've been in my life. And I'm fighting for my life. I'm fighting for my career. I'm fighting for my legacy of being one of the greatest light heavyweight world champions that UFC's ever had to date. And let's see if the lights shine a little brighter on me than they do him. And I expect them to when I get my hand raised.
Now, I remember your first fight with Forrest, the first round against Forrest. You know, clearly a 10-8 round, you took him down and just absolutely mauled him and beat him up. That was the Tito Ortiz I think everybody wants to see and expected to see at that point. Do you believe that Tito Ortiz, that first round against Forrest Griffin, do you believe we're going to see that Tito this weekend?
I plan on it. I've been training like it, you know, and not for the first round, but for all three rounds until the referee pulls me off. And I think that's what Ryan has his weaknesses is when he's backing up. And I'm going to try to push him as hard as possible. I'm going to test his heart. I'm going to test his will. I'm going to test his mind. And I'm going to try to push him. And I'll get the takedown. I'm going to defend the shots, and I'm going to get the takedown. I see Johnny Bones Jones take him down pretty easy. Defend the shots really easy. And I'm a little bigger than Ryan. I'm actually in size a little bigger now because I put on a little weight, and I'm happy. You know, I'm walking around about 222 right now. And then 4 days prior to the fight. But fight time, I'll be right back up to 222, hopefully from 205, and be able to match his strength and to push back with him.
Now, with that said, you talk about your wrestling. We know he comes from a wrestling background, obviously NCAA, you know, All-American as well. Do you look at this as a test of that? Because you've always been a guy that, you know, has been willing to test your wrestling against other guys. And I think people are looking at Ryan trying to, you know, they're looking at him as maybe a new age version of Tito Ortiz. Do you kind of take that as a challenge?
Well, I take every fight as a challenge, man. You know, I look at Bader, a lot of shots he does. He doesn't have much technique, you know. He's more of a bull wrestler. He can shoot your shot high, a high double. You know, Hamill has more of a lower double. And I've watched it from time to time again. When Ryan gets hit with shots, he kind of gets frustrated and shoots from really far away, which will play to my advantage because I'm going to knee him in the face. You know, I'm going to try to punish him. I'm going to try to put hurt on him, you know. Punishment is my brand, and I'm not going to stand away from it. And, you know, wrestling has been my number one key throughout my career. And I'll defend the shot, and then I'll reshoot, and then I'll look for the takedown. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But, you know, I see I'm getting 15 minutes of hell and war.
Absolutely. Now, a few fans had questions for you on Twitter, Tito, and I want to ask these of you real quick. One of the fans asked, we know that you have been friends with Rampage for a long time, and they wondered, would there ever be a time in the future where you would maybe train with Rampage again?
Yes, I would love to. Actually, after Rampage's last win, I went to his after-fight party at my friend's club, Soho, in Fullerton. My friend Damien has a club, and they had his after-party there, and we sat and we talked, and we're planning on doing it in the future for sure. You know, of course, it depends where I go after this fight. You know, I win, and I stick to it. Yeah, we'll probably train together. But either way, I think so. You know, me and Rampage are really good friends. I mean, pretty much like brothers. You know, we've known each other since day one. We trained with each other pretty much since day one until the last 6 years. We kind of got away from each other. He came to the UFC and been dominating, and we had maybe a chance of us fighting each other. But that's never going to happen now just because, you know. Like I said, I love Rampage like a brother. He's my homie no matter what. And I want to see him prevail and become the next light heavyweight world champion of being Johnny Bones Jones, and he had that chance. So I would love to help him in any aspects of life, and I want to see someone succeed in life as him, because I remember back in the day when I had nothing and he had nothing. I just got in my car and I was driving down the street and I seen him walking to work and I picked him up and I gave him a ride. He's like, thanks, Tito. And we've been boys ever since then. And I remember we had nothing and we were there for each other. So when we have everything in the world, we're still here for each other.
Absolutely. Now, as you go into this camp, another question from the fans. You obviously got great coaches and great people you're working with, like Jay Saprilla, you mentioned the name. But the fans got to ask the question, and I know you've been asked this before, Tito. Why has there never been a time when you thought, you know what, I'm going to go work at Greg Jackson's. I'm going to go join AKA. I'm going to go, team up with, Henzo Gracie's. Has any of that crossed your mind, or do you think that, you know, you would be open to that at some point in the future?
I would love to. I just think none of those guys like me. I think jealousy has a big aspect of it. Maybe my loud mouth has a lot to do with it. I have a lot of respect for Greg Jackson. I have a lot of respect for guys at AKA. Kane Vasquez, I think, is an awesome guy. Some of the other guys that train there don't like me as well. I guess I'm one of the guys that they love to hate, and they hate to love. I've thought about it. Greg Jackson, of course, he trains Johnny Bones Jones and all those other guys. So they got their own camp. They got their own things. And I'll find what's going to make me successful in my life and my career here in Huntington Beach.
Yeah, I mean, you really set the bar, we call trash talk, whatever, hype in a fight. I mean, you really set the bar for that, and I think it's kind of, funny or ironic that, people are going to hate on you when you really set the bar for what other people are doing today. I mean, I think it's crazy that people would hate on you for that.
I think so, too. I've set the bar for all fighters. I've raised the bar hugely in payment for them. I paved the way for a lot of guys, and, I kind of set the pedestal for people to achieve to, and I've worked hard, man. All the bad slack I get from, the UFC and for trying to be a businessman on my own and trying to do this stuff on my own when I never had any prior history of doing anything as I've done prior. But I've succeeded, and I've been very successful in all walks of life, and I'm very, very thankful, from a kid who used to be on the street with parents who are drug addicts, who lives in motels and cars and people's garages, to be as successful as I am today. I wasn't supposed to succeed, and once I succeeded in life, I really have I've been thankful for it. I'm thankful for Lorenzo. I'm thankful for Dana White for giving me this opportunity as to be such a great fighter on such a huge stage as I have at the UFC. I want to thank the fans who've supported me throughout this career that I've been doing, and it's maybe not the beginning of it, but I know it's at the end. I know I see the light at the end of the tunnel, but I'm going to give it my all on Saturday night, and when I get my hand raised, people are going to know I'm not going anywhere.
Absolutely. Now, real quick, Tito, I got to bring this up because we recently saw the UFC instituted medical insurance for the fighters, and you've been a guy for years that have battled for higher pay grades. You've talked very openly about a fighter union. Do you believe that move is a move in the right direction as far as things like that, whether it's insurance and then moving towards maybe getting a fighter union? Because I think that's something that you spearheaded for years.
Yeah, I think so, and I'm really proud of Dana. I'm very proud of Lorenzo and UFC of making this happen for us fighters. I think they have put the right step in the forward position of being positive and making this sport what it truly should be, as the NFL, as the NBA, and maybe a fighter union is something that needs to be mandatory. But I got to watch the way I say things because I got to make sure I say things the right way and so people understand where I'm coming from. Is us fighters, we only have an open window of opportunity for so long. We got to make sure we have something to fall back on when this fight career is over. And I'm making sure of that myself. It may not be in fighting. It may be in coaching. It may be in my clothing business, Punishment Athletics, my nutrition line, Punishment Nutrition, even my gyms, Punishment Training Centers. Maybe open to a spot near you. But at the end of the day, as I say, us fighters got to focus on not just being a fighter, but being a businessman, because this is a business. If you don't take this fight career as a business, you're going to be lost behind.
And for your clothing brand, I always like to bring that up, Tito. How is everything? I know we've been seeing a lot more Punishment Athletics on fighters out there recently.
Yeah, I've really been focusing on making some really, really cool stuff. All the logos, everything have been my own ideas. Since day one, it's been like that. Since 1989, I've it hasn't been as big as, Tap Out or so forth, because I don't have huge investors behind me. It's all my own money. It's a family-owned business, and I own it myself. I got it for me, and we really push it to the next level. It's just one of those things that, it's being successful, and it's going to take time, from the grassroots until it is now. I guess I'm not really a big business, but I'm a family in business, and I stay direct to my fans.
Absolutely. Well, Tito, it's always a pleasure. You know, we love having you on the show, and we appreciate the time. Tell people, obviously, where they can check you out and the people supporting you for this weekend's fight with Ryan Bader.
Of course, they can check me out on Twitter, @TitoOrtiz. I'll be posting pictures and talking, as I always do. You know, I'm always never short for words on Twitter. I always say what's on my mind, how I feel. And, of course, go to punishment.com, check out all the new gear that we got up on the site. You know, of course, the lockout shirt and everything else that's on there. You're going to see the new Punishment Bin Laden shirt that I got. And 25% of all proceeds will go to the Wounded Warriors Foundation, because I'm always about giving back to my troops. What's it for them? Us Americans could live the life we could here in the States. And, of course, check out punishmenttrainingcenter.com. And I want to thank my fans, like I say. You know, since day one, they've backed me. You know, the negative, the positive, just at the end of the day, I'm known as a legend in this sport and one of the greatest champions ever graced the Octagon as light heavyweight division. And I want to thank them for their support. Thank Lorenzo and Dana White for giving me this opportunity to fight Ryan Bader. And when my hand is raised, I'll prove a lot of people wrong.
Absolutely. And last question for you, Tito. I think I know the answer. How's this one going to end on Saturday night?
This one's going to end exciting. It's going to end with my hand raised, and that's how it's going to end.
Absolutely. Tito, again, always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Safe travels to Las Vegas, and we will speak to you soon.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nick Kalik is here for this week's UFC 132 betting update, brought to you by BetOnFighting.com. At the main event, bantamweight gold is on the line as champion Dominic Cruz takes on top contender Uriah Faber. Cruz enters the fight as a slight favorite at minus 130 odds. In the co-main event, MMA legend Wanderlei Silva makes his long-awaited return and faces middleweight slugger Chris Leben. Silva heads into this fight as a minus 175 favorite over Leben. For the rest of this weekend's UFC 132 odds, make sure you head on over to BetOnFighting.com, the best place to get caught up on all the latest fight odds and much more. BetOnFighting.com, where the MMA line originates.
Want to say a big thank you once again to the Huntington Beach bad boy, Tito Ortiz, for coming on the radio show. We definitely appreciate him stopping by. Obviously, his fight will come up on Saturday night against Ryan Bader. We're going to be talking to Ryan a little bit later. Actually, we're going to go back-to-back with two of the teammates from Power MMA and Fitness, the new gym out in Arizona. We're going to first talk to Aaron Simpson, followed up by Ryan Bader. The reason I do that is because I actually conducted the interviews back-to-back, and you'll understand why I'm doing them back-to-back when you hear them. So let's talk first to Aaron Simpson, followed up by Ryan Bader, and see if you like the little joke we play on Ryan Bader. Make sure you check this out. Here's first Aaron Simpson talking about his fight, followed up by Ryan Bader talking Tito Ortiz. MMA Weekly Radio, Damon Martin back here with Aaron Simpson. Aaron, how is everything?
Everything is going great. Just, 2 weeks out from my fight and feeling great, feeling anxious to get this show on the road.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, before we get into this whole fight thing, you know, I know that's what we're supposed to talk about, but the question I got hammered with today on Twitter, and I'm talking hammered when I said I was interviewing you and Bader nonstop, was what is going on with you guys and your Twitter accounts?
I think it's just all in good fun. We've been getting a rise out of each other since he was a freshman in college, I think, so it's just continued on with a more of a global, on a global scale now, I guess. Now a lot of people can see how we treat each other.
So are you guys literally just stealing each other's phones and messing with each other? Is that what's going on?
Oh yeah, it's you know he leaves his phone out and for the longest time he didn't have a lock on it, and so I'd go by his locker and his phone would just be sitting out, so I could just nail it, and they were doing, you know, if someone jumps on a laptop and they leave their account up, you know, that's always a good time to jump in on someone's Facebook or Twitter and update their status, and so I think he somehow, I had my phone locked and he figured out my code to my phone. I don't know how he did it. It was, I don't know. But or he just got lucky or something. But he knows my combo to my locker and my gym somehow. He figured that out, and so he's yeah. It's just a good way to pull some pranks on each other. But you know, I guess it's all good fun.
Yeah. So what's I've seen a lot of the messages. What's the best one you got him with so far?
I don't know. I think the one that got the good rise, a lot of people commented, was him saying he pooped himself in his sleep. I think I pooped my pants. I woke up and I put my pants in and was like, oh my God. Then it was, then he had to come back and say he got hacked or whatever. But, you know, he starts going, he got a little crude on me one time with maybe a homophobic slur in my opinion. But, it's back and forth with each other.
Yeah.
And then we're starting to get our, you know, we're starting to get our front desk girl in on it. We've got her a couple times, and Ryan McNeil, who's our the GM of our gym. So everyone's getting involved, and it's getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah. So now beyond Twitter, when you guys between college and now, you guys have had to have played some other classic pranks on each other. What else have you? What's the best one ever? There's got to be a good one. I know you have to have.
You know, I have, and it's just not with me and Vader. I mean, I like to pull pranks on people just in general, and so, you know, being a coach with college students for the last, you know, 10 years, and then being an athlete there at ASU, I mean, I don't even know if I can put my thumb on. You put me on the spot right now. I can't even think of something that off the top of my head, but there have been some good ones, and it's not just, you know, like I said, me versus him or him and me. I mean, he's done some stuff to people. He likes it, too. He likes to get in people's heads and screw with them, as do I. So it's kind of nice we both, you know, can sing each other here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the funniest thing is the question I keep getting today, and I don't know if this was started on Twitter, but people kept messing with Bader about him being Matt Hamill. Have you seen this one?
Oh yeah, that's been going. That's a couple of years, and I love it that that someone tweeted him. They're like, "Hey man, tough." They obviously know that it's Ryan Bader. Like, tough fight with Rampage there, man, blah, 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 and, you know, and Bader always goes back, you know, I'm not Matt Hamill, right? Like, I don't even know if he got the joke, but I think that's hilarious. We taught it, we used to tease about Matt Hamill and about Nate Marquardt. He kind of resembles Marquardt, too, so.
Yeah, that's
and then
funny.
The other day, someone at our gym, we got some boxers there, and we got a couple of Russian boxers that are trained at Power MMA, and one of the coaches looked over at me and then was kind of asking one of the guys if I was Vitor Belfort. I'm like, is that Belfort? I'm like, nah, but I've gotten that a couple times.
Yeah, I'm interviewing Ryan right after you. I'm thinking about getting him on the line, and when I start the interview, be like, MMA Weekly Radio, we're here with Matt Hamill. I mean, Ryan.
No, you have to do that. I'll be disappointed if you don't do that.
That was what's funny is that, you know, you guys both put out that I was interviewing you today, and literally the first three questions were all about what does Bader think about fighting Rampage? How do you feel about that fight?
That's great.
Oh, I was dying. I was just like this thing because I saw it a couple times on Twitter, but today it just went nuts. That was like half the questions were messing with him about being Matt Hamill. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So I'm gonna do it. He's gonna get mad at me, but that's all right. I'm gonna do it. So.
You know, I love that all these fans, they would just love it hanging out at our gym then, because that's pretty much all we do is just riff on each other between sparring sessions or grappling or wrestling, whatever. It's pretty much just comedy in there.
Yeah, and I know you guys have had the gym open for a while now. How is everything there?
It is going great, man. It's kicking butt, and we're just getting we're pushing for about 400 members right now. We're getting like, I don't know, within a couple members of that. And, you know, I think we're going to have that thing build up here before at the end of the summer to a huge membership base. And I think a lot, we're getting a really great response from our members, and it's just an awesome place for us to train in general, you know, just as a pro athlete to go in there and train.
Absolutely.
Outside of just, you know, the regular person. So, yeah, we're excited.
Yeah. Now, another big question I got from the fans today was, you know, how hard is it to you know, be able to carry so many hats? Because beyond being a husband and a father, you're also a fighter, and now you're an entrepreneur with the gym. I mean, how do you balance all that, especially right now, just, you know, a couple weeks out from the fight?
Well, and that's just it. I mean, we're in a position we've got a great general manager who's really taken upon him, you know, takes it on his shoulders. And between the three of us, like Bader and I have been in camp, CB's really taken a lot of the responsibilities, and now, you know, since we're done with this fight, we'll step in there and do more, and we just really can kind of divvy up the tasks that way, and it's really been basically about me showing up and training and going home and, you know, being with my family, so I don't have to deal with the gym at all, and that's, you know, a really cool part of it, besides, you know, some appearances here and there and a couple things, but that's, you know, just, you know, fun stuff. Outside of training, so it's a great, you know, it's a win-win for us.
Yeah, and I know from talking to you and Ryan and CB and all you guys, I mean, getting the gym open was a huge thing, just because it gives you one home base. You're not traveling. I mean, you get your own gym. That's got to be a great feeling.
It really is. I can't describe it. I do everything there. You know, lifting you know, our conditioning and lifting and wrestling. I don't have to go up to ASU and wrestle anymore. In fact, we had the ASU guys, a couple of their guys come in and wrestle with us the other day. And It's perfect. You know, I don't ever want to travel anywhere else now. You know, if people want to come in, they'll love training at our gym now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, switching gears towards the fight, before we talk about Brad Tavares, originally, as everyone knows, you were going to face Jason Mayhem Miller for this fight. That was a huge fight, you know, huge opportunity for you, and a welcome to the welcome back to the UFC for Mayhem. When you got the call that he had been yanked from the fight, what's running through your mind? Disappointment? Are you bummed out? What was going through your mind?
You know, I was definitely disappointed because of the magnitude of the fight and you know, who I was fighting. And, you know, I honestly thought I felt like I was going to beat him, and, you know, that was going to be a great win for me, and I can move up and whatever. But, you know, looking back now, it's a no-brainer for the UFC and for Mayhem, for who he is and the following that he has. I can't, you know, I don't have any say. I can be disappointed in the fight alone. But I can't be like, call UFC and be like, that's effed up and I'm pissed and blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't have that position. It was an awesome move. It's an awesome move for him because I honestly feel he'll beat Bisping. I mean, I'd love to fight Bisping. I'd love to fight both those guys. But, you know, in due time, I think. And I really think that he's going to make a very interesting show. Both of those guys are. I think that next Ultimate Fighter may be one of the most viewed just because of the two personalities. Who knows? But, It was obviously a good move on his part.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know that, you know, being a good company man, you know, obviously you roll with the punches. I mean, obviously you still get to fight, you still get on the same card, you don't have to bump back and wait. So at least there's always that, you know, you can always have that solace with the UFC.
Yeah, that was my biggest question was, you know, are you going to pull me off this card? I mean, I'm, you know, 5 weeks in training here, are you really going to pop me off this? I was looking forward to being there with Vader and, you know, us going through camp together and everything. And so that was, luckily they found me an opponent and, you know, here we are 2 weeks out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, this is totally off the subject, but I just saw another great prank you can play on Vader on Twitter. You ready for this one?
Yeah, what's up?
Get someone to do you remember the Tito Ortiz fiasco from a couple weeks ago, the Twitter pick thing? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, with Jenna?
Yeah, no. Well, where he put a certain picture of himself on Twitter by accident. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, he tweeted out a pic of Tito and Little Tito. Let's just put it that way.
And, no way.
He absolutely did. And then he came back and said, "Oh, my account got hacked," but it was he accidentally Twittered it instead of sending it to somebody. But anyways, what I think you should do is there's blurred out copies of it now. You need to Photoshop Bader's face on Tito and put it up on Twitter. I'm telling you, that would be gold. I'm telling you, that would be gold. That'd be a good way to get Bader.
Yeah, that would be good. Huh. You'll Photoshop that. I didn't even realize that happened.
Oh, yeah, it definitely happened. Wow. It was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I thank God I didn't click on the picture, but I heard about it right after. It was on TMZ and everything, and I was like, what in the world happened? And yep, it was true.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I guess that's a whole new way to sell a fight, so.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway, sorry, that popped in my head, and I was like, ooh, there's a great way to get Bader. Look at me helping you out here getting Bader. He's not going to like me very much. Now switching gears back to the fight, you go from Mayhem to a guy in Brad Tavares, tough guy, obviously out of Hawaii and a former Ultimate Fighter. What do you think about him as a fighter?
He was an interesting matchup just because he has come off the Ultimate Fighter. He has had some success so far in the UFC, and he does come at you hard, you know, and I like that. You know, I like someone to come at me and fight me hard, and so it's going to be a good one. Seth Brzezinski, who I train with, Seth fought him twice, fought him on the show and then fought him on the finale. And I thought he had a pretty good fight. Then had a couple triangles that he didn't finish on his back. But, you know, just having Seth go fight him once, I think is a big help to me and being able to talk and discuss things. And Seth has been right along my camp with Bader, and CB's been in there and Robbie Lawler's been in there. So I've got a pretty good camp and a pretty good, you know, feel for a Brad Tavares type fighter now.
Yeah, when you look at Brad, you know, I don't like to peg anyone as one type of style, but I don't think it's crazy to say he likes to stand and strike. He likes to bang, brawl a little bit. And having a guy like Robbie Lawler in camp's got to be huge, because I think Robbie's, you know, a little bit more disciplined than that, but at the same time, he's one of the most powerful strikers in all MMA, and even though he's a weight class down from you, that's still got to be he's 185, that's right, what am I thinking about? But he's a powerful striker, and it's got to be a nice benefit to always have him around.
Yeah, it is, you know, and not just the fact he's a powerful striker, but just to pick his mind. I mean, he's got a mind for this, you know. He's a, in my opinion, a great MMA coach and maybe one of the best out there. There's not a question you can ask that he won't have an answer for. And so in any facet, from, you know, fighting off the cage to getting takedowns to defending takedowns to getting a takedown and, you know, doing damage on top and let alone just being on your feet. He knows it all, and he's been through he's been through some great camps and had great training partners since he started this thing. So, you know, we're just lucky to have him there at our gym now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, to that point, you know, you went in your last fight against the guy Mario Miranda, who is more of a stand-up fighter, more, you know, obviously a little bit more Muay Thai to his style with, you know, the Brazilians. But, you know, obviously you kind of knew his game plan coming in was to, you know, stand and strike. And you played a very smart, very strategic game plan with him to, you know, to not play into his strengths. With a guy like Brad Tavares, once again, you get a guy who you know probably wants to stand and strike with you. So how much does, you know, having kind of back-to-back fights with guys like that, does that help? Does it matter?
Well, I think he's actually a little more dangerous than Mario Miranda. I mean, Tavares comes at you and he hits hard, and his wrestling to me is a little better than what everyone was talking about Mario Miranda's was. I mean, I didn't feel like Mario Miranda's wrestling was going to be very, you know, that dangerous. But you know, if you've seen Tavares fight Buzinski, he's got some good takedowns, and you know that's always a threat when someone can get in on your legs and take you down. And so, you know, I'm looking for Tavares to mix it up, not just make it a stand up war. You know, I think that he'll be trying to take me down, try to attack me down. So, you know, they are similar in a way, but they're very different. Their body types are different. Their the way they throw their punches are different. And so, makes it a little different, especially from, you know, training for a guy like Mayhem and now training for Tavares. You know, that was going to be a completely different way to go out and fight. And so, you know, I've got a game plan that we've been working for Tavares, and we'll just have to go out there and execute it now.
Yeah. How has the intensity been in camp? You mentioned before you and Ryan both fighting on the same card. You both got big fights on here. I mean, does that amp everything up a little bit?
Oh, yeah, definitely, especially on sparring days. You know, we spar 3 days a week, and Bader and I were going out there hitting, you know, 5 or 6 rounds, just he and I, and just going for it, you know, going, just not, you know, not holding back on each other. And it was it's been a rough camp. It's been a tough camp, I guess, not rough, but a tough camp. And we both, you know, just accept it with open arms and move forward. We're both in great shape and ready to go out there and get 2 wins for Power MMA.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know I hate to bring up a bad subject because, you know, I was bummed out as well, but the Miami Heat, unfortunately, did not pull through with the NBA title this year. But is Mike Miller still coming out with you guys to Vegas?
Yeah, he actually is coming out here. He's getting surgery tomorrow on his shoulder and his thumb. You know, he was so beat up there through the series, and finally he's getting surgery, and he'll be actually coming out here on Thursday and kind of spend a couple days with us out here, and then heading up to Vegas. Yeah, he'll be out there for my fight, and actually I'm going to probably have him walk me out for weigh-ins.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, everyone, yeah. For the UFC fans and our basketball fans, I'm like, who is that tall guy with Aaron Simpson?
Yeah, now you know it's Mike Miller, the Miami Heat.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, Aaron, yeah. I tell you what, buddy, I'm looking forward to the fight. Obviously, you and Bader both. And as always, you know, we appreciate you taking the time to come on our show. But let me give you a chance, as always, man. Teammates, sponsors, you know the deal. Anybody you want to give a shout out to, go right ahead.
Yeah, Tilted Kilt. You know, it's a national franchise. They're a big sponsor of us. We've got an MMA team. They have a website, tiltedkiltmma.com, which is really cool. And you can check out their Twitter page at tiltedkiltpub.com. @tiltedkiltpub, I guess. And, you know, they're really huge for us. High Tech Pharmaceuticals is also very big for us. And, you know, we've put a good team together here at Power MMA and got those guys supporting us, which has been nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And follow me on Twitter too, @AaronSimpson.
There you go. And keep and trust me, following you and Bader and everybody else on Twitter, it's an adventure. So there's a reason beyond just fighting to follow you guys.
There you go. Yeah, we delve into a little more than just what I ate today and how hard my workout was.
Exactly. You might even find out about Bader pooping himself in bed, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, again, buddy, good talking to you, and best of luck coming up in the fight, bro.
Thanks, bud. Talk to you later.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. MMA Weekly Radio, Damon Martin back here with Matt Hamill. Ryan Bader. I'm sorry, Ryan, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, not to be confused with Matt Hamill. I know we look alike, but yeah, I've been getting that a lot lately. Every day I have a tweet was like, oh, man, don't worry about that fight with Rampage. You got him next time. I'm like, man.
Oh, that's great. Well, you can blame Aaron for that. When I told him I was going to do it, he's like, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, what's funny is we put out that we had, you know, we're having you on the show tonight, and obviously you guys retweeted it, and so, you know, I had the, you know, I had a ton of questions about Tito, but the one I kept getting was about, do you hate being compared to Matt Hamill? Do you hate the confusion? Like, I was like, that's hilarious.
I've been actually, you know, early in my career at Vegas, walking through the MGM, somebody came up and was like, Matt, sign my, you know, the program, and they opened it up to Matt Hamill's whole page. He's fighting on that card, and I wasn't, and I was like, I'm not Matt Hamill, and they're like, Matt, just sign it, and I'm like, all right, I'll sign it. There you go.
So there's somebody walking around with a magazine thinking they got Matt Hamill to sign it.
Exactly, yeah, it's funny.
That's hilarious. Yeah, what's funny is people replying on Twitter, obviously knowing you're not Matt Hamill, but I think it's hilarious. They're like, dude, that Rampage fight was tough, man, but I know you're going to bounce back.
I had people going like, hey, good luck in that fight with Fedor next weekend.
Oh, man. Well, that brings me to my next question, because I was just talking to Aaron about this as well, is the Twitter pranks you guys are playing on each other, because someone, that was another question, like, dude, what's up with Ryan pooping in the bed?
Yeah, no, you know, we're at the gym, and, you know, we finally, you know, have our own gym, our own home and all that, and somebody leaves their phone out, man, they get hacked by either one of us or our GM or anybody, really, front desk people. But yeah, a couple times, you know, I've watched, you know, we all have our codes on our phone, you know, now, but, you know, at the beginning, I'd go work out, set my phone down, and then come back, and I pooped my bed, I did all this stuff, and I'm like, what the hell?
just be glad, and I know you know what I'm talking about, just be glad nobody sent out anything like what Tito did a few weeks back, okay? That's all.
I hope they don't go that far.
I was talking to Aaron about that. I was like, man, talk about a guy trying to promote a fight in a really odd way. I don't really get that.
Oh, yeah. Now, if we started doing that, that'd be a real slippery slope, and we'd pull out the big guns, and it wouldn't be good for anybody.
Yeah, he said, Aaron told me that you guys played some pretty monstrous pranks for the past few years over through college and everything else. It's been an ongoing war.
Oh, yeah. You know, just having fun, but it's I guess on a bigger scale when you start to get, you know, more Twitter followers or everything, and people probably think we're weirdos, but, you know, we're just having fun. Plus, it's real boring in training camp. All we're doing is training and going a little stir-crazy, so, you know, just a little fun outlet.
Yeah, now, I got one for you to prank Aaron with. I didn't tell him this one. I saved one for you, okay? Now, you're a college guy, so you may already know about this, but have you ever pennied someone in their room? Have you ever done that before?
I don't think I have.
Okay, all you do is, if you got a room where they got like a turnstile door, like bathroom or whatever, if you take like 5 or 6 pennies and you jam them, like, you know how the door gives, you know, it pushes a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
If you take it and jam the pennies in there real tight, like 5 or 6 pennies, they can't open the door. The door is so jammed tight next to the wood that the door will not literally open. You cannot unlock it. You cannot turn it open. And you can trap, we did that one time. We trapped someone in their dorm room for 6 hours one time.
So, oh, man.
You can put him, lock him in the bathroom, make sure he's in there taking care of whatever, you know, dropping some kids off at the pool, and then penny him in and lock him in there for about an hour and see how ready he's ready to kill you when he gets out of there.
Yeah, since we're fighting on the same card, maybe I'll do that right before his fight, and he'll be a little late.
I'm telling you, it's a great prank, and people freak out because they can't figure out why the door won't open. It's literally just jammed shut.
They don't know what's going on.
Yeah. So
yeah. I'll have to try that one.
Yeah, it only costs you about 6 cents to do it, too. That's the best part.
There you go.
So Ryan, obviously, big fight coming up. Tito Ortiz, how is training and everything getting ready for this one?
Training's going great. I'm healthy. I'm in great shape. And, you know, I'm just ready to go. You know, coming off a loss, I have that fire burning, and I want to get back in there and have a great showing. So, you know, I'm training, you know, extra hard to make that happen. And, you know, people coming up to me all the time, you know, who you fighting? No, you're fighting Tito. Oh, you got this easy. But they don't understand. Tito's a tough opponent for anybody, and I'm not taking him lightly at all. And I'm training my ass off, and I'm ready. And, you know, I want to go out there and look great. And I put in you know, I put in the time in the camp to achieve that, you know, come fight time.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let me backtrack a little bit to the John Jones fight, because, you know, you've never been a fighter to make excuses for any kind of performance, but watching that fight, I was watching it, Ryan, and my honest opinion was it just didn't look like you in there. It just didn't look like the Ryan Bader I'm used to seeing. When you go back and watch that fight, what did you learn, and what are you feeling like, you know, now that you have a chance to kind of sit back and reflect?
You know, it just it was a combination of you know, him being, you know, a very good fighter, and me just felt like not showing up. You know, I felt flat out there. You know, I was actually like right before the fight, I was sitting there like I'm about ready to fight in a big, you know, a big time fight, and I was like sitting out there like yawning. I'm like, what is going on? And I've been in competition enough to know that happens sometimes, and whether it was, you know, the magnitude of the fight, or you know, all the media coming up, you know, to that point or something, I don't know what it was, but you know, I was really pissed off after that fight, not so much in that I lost, but in that I felt like I didn't show up to fight at all, and I didn't fight to my potential one bit. And you know, it took me a while. I sat there, you know, every time at night before bed, you know, for a week, it was just bugging me so bad. And then I was like, look, you know, to myself, I was like, well, you got to let it go and just use it, you know, for, you know, fire for your next opponent and your career. And so I feel, even, you know, losing is never a good thing, but I've learned from it, you know, and the experience and being in a big fight like that and feeling like the way I did out there. It's just experience, and you know, I'm going to carry that over and get better from it and train harder.
Yeah, I remember talking to John Jones actually after his fight with Matt Hamill. Funny enough, when he you know, he got DQ'd, he didn't, you know, technically lose, but it, you know, counted as a loss on his record.
Yeah.
He honestly said, he's like, look, no one wants to lose, but it is, you know, that pressure. I don't have that, you know, that undefeated question coming at me anymore. I hated that question. It was a tough question to answer, and now, you know, at least I got that off my back. I mean, you know, obviously that you got to take some positives away from it. Does it just, you know, now you know what it feels like, and I'm sure you never want to feel that way again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you never want to, you know, I never want to feel lost again. You know, it happens, but you know, now I've learned from it, and you know, gave me a little bit more motivation. I didn't need any more motivation, but it just gave me that extra bit, you know, to get back in the gym and learn, and you know, just keep getting better, really. And you know, I feel really good this camp. You know, it's really cliche, but I feel the best in, as far as conditioning-wise, that I've ever felt. And maybe that was one of the things that, in the past, that's, you know, something that I've needed to work on. But I feel like I remedied that. And that also comes with just experience and me being more technical and not trying to go out there where in the past where I just go out there, throw big overhand rights, try to kill people and get them out as soon as possible. You know, I'm going to be more technical. I'm looking back at my fights when, you know, I did get a knockout, or, you know, like on Jardine, the punch that really stopped him was a straight right hand, you know, not an overhand or anything like that. So just being more technical and breathing a little better and just in better shape overall. And that's one of the things I'm excited about for this fight. I'm going to be in really good shape.
Absolutely. Now, you got Tito Ortiz in this fight, and this is a fight you've talked about for a while, you know, wanting to fight a guy like Tito. What was it about, you know, the Tito Ortiz fight that intrigued you or interested you so much?
You know, the thing about the Tito Ortiz fight is just, you know, being able to get in the octagon with a guy like that and being able to fight somebody, you know, that's been around the game and started in this MMA game and got it to where it is today. You know, I'm a fighter and an MMA fan, and I grew up watching this, you know, with my collegiate wrestling background. You know, always something that was in the back of my mind that I could do. And watching Tito, you know, with a similar background, and guys like Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture, you know, I grew up watching those guys. So, you know, it's you know, for me, this fight is just something that it's kind of like a bucket list fight, you know, something that I got in there. Tito Ortiz is on my record, you know, hopefully in my win column, but, you know, he's in on my record. I fought a guy like that. And, you know, it may not, you know, boost me up in rankings as fighting like a top three guy or whatever, but you know, it's something that I did, you know, I wanted to fight a guy like Chuck Liddell, like Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, you know, before they all retired, and two of them are gone now, and Tito has left, and, you know, I got the opportunity to fight him, so I jumped at it.
Yeah. Now, I know that there's been a lot of talk going into this when, you know, Tito has openly said that, you know, he basically had to beg to get his job. You know, they basically wanted him to walk away and retire after the Hamill fight, and, you know, he kind of pleaded with them to give him one more chance, and they gave him you, because it's a fight I know you wanted. You know, obviously the pressure's on. He loses this one. I think we all know his UFC career is over. So, I mean, what would that mean to you, or how does that hold for you, knowing that, you know, this could be, you know, you could be the guy that technically puts Tito Ortiz, you know, an icon of the sport, out of the UFC?
Yeah, I don't really think about that at all. You know, I don't really want to be the guy that puts him out and retires him, because, he's been around so long, he did a lot for the sport, but that's my job to do, and I'm not looking at it as that. I'm just looking at it as an opponent out there I just have to go beat. You know, it just happens to be Ortiz, and if I beat him, you know, it could be his last fight, more than likely. I have a job to do, too. I'm not going to go in there and lay down so he can get a win and stay in the UFC. You know, it's my job to go out there and beat him, you know, and after the fact, you know, it happens, and it's, you know, sad and everything, but that's what I got to do. I got to go in there and win. So I'm not thinking that. And that's how I look at my opponent. Each opponent I get, you know, it's just another guy in front of me. It's not, you know, Tito Ortiz or his past, you know, opponents. It's just another opponent that I'm training for, and to go in there and win, and just taking, you know, the fights just one at a time, and no names or nothing, because at the end of the day, you're in there, and you got to fight the guy in front of you.
Yeah, and there's always a certain level of a circus atmosphere, I guess, with, you know, when fighting Tito. And you know, obviously, when you get to the press conference, you know, Tito's going to answer a slew of questions about retirement, and Jenna's name's going to come up. And, I mean, there's going to be a million different things. And, of course, you know, you're going to have that question come at you about the retirement thing. But in all honesty, you know Tito's fights are always kind of a circus. Does it take some of the pressure off you just because that question's going to come at him so, you know, heavy and often about, you know, this is your last fight, this is your last chance? I mean, this is a big, you know, you're a top 10 guy. He's not. I mean, you're the bigger guy in this fight, but the pressure is kind of on Tito.
Yeah, but at the same time, I have a lot to lose now too. You know, he's a tough opponent for anybody, and he's only lost the top guys, and, you know, he hasn't lost or won in, you know, 4+ years now, but at the same time, he's right there in the fights with everybody. And, you know, I'm kind of in a weird position too, because, you know, it's kind of lose-lose for me. If I beat him, I was supposed to win. You know, what happens if you lose to him? You know, he's a huge losing record right now, you know, in the past couple of years. But so I have some pressure too. But, yeah, I mean, obviously he is at the tail end, and, you know, this could be his last fight, and all that hoopla surrounding that, you know. And I don't really like to get into, you know, that too much before a fight. I kind of like to just keep my head down and, you know, do what I have to do, you know, media-wise and at the press conference and all that. But I'm just kind of looking to the fight, and then, you know, whatever happens, happens. But, you know, he definitely does bring a lot of, you know, fans and eyeballs and controversy, I guess, you know, to any one of his fights. So, but that's what he does, you know, and, you know, that's good and bad. So,
yeah. And I know one of the biggest things with Tito over the years is he was one of the first fighters to really go out there and sell a fight, you know, whether it was smack talking or, you know, just kind of getting under his opponent's skin, the mental aspect of the sport. He was one of the first guys to really do that and openly admit he was doing that. So, you know, you've never been that way. You've never been a guy to talk smack on an opponent or sit here and, you know, dog a guy. So are you ready? Are you gonna have a good laugh if he tries to do that? Because you're just not that guy. You've never been that guy.
Yeah, you know, I don't really play into that game. You know, if he insults me enough or, you know, hits something that I don't like, then I'll fire back at him. But I really don't think he is going to. You know, I haven't heard anything or too much yet. And, you know, and I think if he was, you know, trying to sell a fight and trying to do his whole shit talking routine, that I would have heard and been started by now. You know, I actually, in his interviews, I've heard nothing but, you know, good things said about, you know, myself. And, you know, I'm pretty respectful to everybody, and I'm respectful to him too. And, you know, he deserves it, but, yeah, I'd really like to, you know, fall into all that stuff. 'Cause at the end of the day, you know, you're fighting, and there's really, you know, words can only go so far, and what happens, you know, anywhere, street or whatever, it ends in a fight and it's settled. I mean, it's going to end in a fight, you know, for sure here. So, you know, I don't know. I just don't. I would never want to be on the other side where I'm talking a bunch of smack and then it backfires in my face.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is, and you mentioned it, while Tito has been losing fights, you know, A, he's been losing against good guys, but also B, he hasn't really been blown out of the water. It's not like he got finished in the first round or, you know, went out there and just got destroyed in every one of these fights. I mean, he's been competitive. So, I mean, is his record, you know, are people, you know, undervaluing Tito a little bit? I mean, obviously he's not getting wins, but it's not like he's getting killed in there.
Yeah, I think they are. You know, it pisses me off when people come up and say that, oh, you're fighting Tito. Oh, you might as well not even train. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, he's the top fighter in the world. And you don't come up and, say that. And there's no easy fights in the UFC at all. And Tito is a champion, and you know, he's been a multiple-time champion, and he knows how to win. And he's had a rough streak lately, but it's against top guys, and he's barely losing those fights, and he's hanging in there in all of them. So I expect a tough fight, and I've trained for a tough fight.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think that's the thing is, like I said, you can say what you want about Tito, but he's still a tough guy, and I don't think anyone can overlook him.
Yeah, not at all, and I'm not, you know. So I had a great training camp with the better ones I've ever had, and, you know, that's probably due to experience and all that too, but, you know, I can't wait for this fight. And like I said, I want to get back in there, get on the winning streak, and look to keep winning and get back to the top.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned, of course, Ryan, we got a lot of questions from the fans on Twitter, and I've already been kind of asking a lot of them because most of them are about Tito and stuff, but I got a few more outside of the fight, so I'm going to throw them at you if you can answer them for us.
Okay.
All right. One of the first ones, and this is a pretty broad question, but just basically a broad question was, of all the guys you haven't fought yet, who is another fight out there somewhere down the road that you look at and say, that's a fun fight, that's a fight I'd like to have?
I don't know. You know, I don't really have anybody in particular that I want to fight right now, except for Tito. You know, I'm looking, you know, towards that fight. But, you know, I just want to fight. You know, I think I'll have a long career, and I think I'll fight the best guys, and that's who I want to fight. And, looking, you know, in the future and all those top guys that are, you know, in my weight class. I mean, I would like to fight them all one day. And so, but I have no really fight in particular that I wanted to fight. Like I said earlier, I did want to fight a guy like Chuck Liddell or Randy Couture or Tito Ortiz, you know, those legends of the sport and before they all retired. And so I got that fight. So, now I just want to win and then just keep beating those top guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings, you know, one name that came up, and I'll just ask you what you think about him, is a guy like Phil Davis. What do you think about Phil and what he's been doing lately?
Phil Davis is a great guy. He's a good fighter. You know, he's a beast, you know, super strong. He has great, great wrestling, you know, good kicks, and he's just getting more and more comfortable, you know, every time he goes out there. You know, he has a tough fight coming up with Rashad. And that's an interesting fight, because Phil is a great, great wrestler. You know, Rashad's definitely more seasoned, has, you know, more experience and better stand-up, but you never know what's going to happen. And, he's one of those guys that's really, you know, coming up, and a win over Rashad puts him right in there in the mix for, you know, title shot. So I'm sure I'll run into him one day too. So
yeah, absolutely. And the last question I got, and this is actually an interesting one. I know obviously a few years ago you were working, obviously you've been in Arizona for a long time, but one of the fans was asking, do you still stay in contact with Jamie Varner or any of the old guys you used to work with out at Arizona Combat Sports?
Occasionally I'll talk to Varner, here and there. I'll see him every once in a while. I think he's moving out to the East Coast now, and training somewhere else, but, see, you know, some of the old trainers and stuff that, you know, certain local fights here and there. And, that's about it. I mean, all the other fighters, I'm still cool with everybody and hope they're all cool with me. But, we moved on, opened up a new gym and all that. And, all the guys that I really started out training with are, you know, training with me now too. So, there's not too many people, that I started out with that we're not still training with.
Yeah, and let's just throw out the plug. Power MMA and Fitness is the gym we're talking about.
Yes, sir. Power MMA and Fitness. We've been open 3 months now and got almost 400 members and a good fight team, and it's a great facility and we're enjoying it.
Yeah, I know, you know, you and Aaron and CB, I know Robbie Lawler's out there teaching full time now. I mean, you guys are building up not only a great team but also a great coaching staff. I mean, for young guys, you guys are really building from the ground up, right?
Yeah, you know, and we, we teach all day MMA classes as far as like amateur MMA. Simpson and I haven't been because we're in training camp and we're focused on that. But as soon as we're done, we're back in there, and Robbie Lawler's actually teaching it as we speak. You know, so that's cool for guys to come in and, you know, get to, you know, get coached by Robbie Lawler and guys like that, and actually, you know, the real deal MMA.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting to just the last tail end of the questions I got from the fans, and this is a good one as well. You know, a lot of people look at you and Tito and they see similarities, but they see you as kind of a newer, you know, maybe a better version of what Tito was. You know, a wrestler with, you know, solid stand-up, great ground and pound. I mean, do you take that as a compliment?
Yeah, I really do. You know, I grew up watching guys like Tito and, you know, and we have the same background, and he has done really well for himself. You know, you know, we have that wrestling background, and you know, I'm just trying to get better in every aspect of it, of MMA. And you know, Tito has a really underrated ground game too. He's good off his back and with his jiu-jitsu, and you know, I've seen that in the fight, you know, with, like, the cheetah and stuff. But yeah, I do take that as a compliment, and you know, hopefully I can use his own tools and go out there and beat him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know this is, like I said, this is a great fight, man. This is a great opportunity. Like I said, I mean, you know, it's still a, you know, a moment to see a Tito fight, and I think it's going to be great to see you go out there and get a win over Tito. I think that's, you know, still, it still means something in MMA. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to go in there and, you know, not only just get a win, you know, and get back on the winning track, but, you know, to share the octagon with, you know, a guy I grew up, you know, watching.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Ryan, it's always a pleasure to catch up. You know that. We always appreciate the time. And let me give you a chance before I get you out of here for your sponsors, your teammates, your Twitter, before Aaron hacks it again. Anybody you want to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, I want to thank Tap Out, you know, the Air Force Reserve, you know, Magnum Pharmaceuticals, and then Twitter is at Ryan Bader, and I do, you know, keep up with that, pretty active on that, you know, show my training, my nutrition, and a little bit of everything, so follow me.
Absolutely, and I know I was talking to Aaron about it as well. I know our buddy Mike Miller is going to be out there supporting you guys next weekend.
Yeah, he'll be out to fight. I think he might even come out and maybe, you know, walk out with one of us at the weigh-in. So that'll be a cool thing for him. But yeah, so he's coming out and supporting us and watching the fights.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Ryan, again, man, always a pleasure speaking to you. Safe travels out to Las Vegas, and let's catch up after the win, right?
Absolutely, appreciate it, having me on.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye, bye.
Once again, say a big thank you to our good friends of the show, Aaron Simpson and Ryan Bader. Obviously, we appreciate them coming on. Looking forward to Saturday night, UFC 132, both of them on the card. Aaron Simpson taking on Brad Tavares. Ryan Bader takes on Tito Ortiz. And, of course, our old friend Mike Miller from the Miami Heat will be walking out with them at the weigh-ins. And I should be talking to Mike a little later this week for an interview that I'm going to play on the radio. So hopefully I'll catch up with Mike Miller on Thursday or Friday, and we'll have that interview on MMA Weekly Radio next week. One more interview to get to tonight before we get out of here. He is, of course, one of the top strikers in the lightweight division coming out of England. His name is Andre Winner. He's going to be taking on Anthony Njikawani on the prelims live on Facebook this Saturday night, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Make sure you check those out. I'm telling you what, right now, this fight has fireworks written all over it. I made fun last night of saying guys should not predict fight of the night. Guys, the fighters should never predict it because it just never seems to work. But I can predict it and say this one has fight of the night potential between Njikawani and Andre Winner. These two are both bangers. They're strikers. They're good fighters. This one definitely has fireworks written all over it. I think somebody will get knocked out. Then again, you know, there's a lot of fights I thought somebody would get knocked out. It didn't work out. But as long as they don't predict it, as long as they don't come out and say, this is going to be fight of the night, as long as they don't say it, we're okay. So let's talk to Andre Winn, and then we're going to get out of here tomorrow night. We got one more huge show to close out the week, plus UFC 132 breakdown of predictions. We're going to be talking to our old friend Melvin Gillard, who's going to stop by to talk about his fight coming up with Shane Roller, as well as his opponent. Shane Roller is going to be stopping by the show. We also have Anthony Njikawani coming on to talk about his fight with Andre Winner. So make sure you're here for all that tomorrow night. Another huge show to close out our week on MMA Weekly Radio before UFC 132 gets here. But right now, it is time to talk to Andre Winner. MMA Weekly Radio, Damon Martin here with Andre Winner. Andre, how's everything going?
Everything's going real good.
Obviously, getting geared up for the big fight in July against Anthony Njikawani. Are you already in the midst of a full training camp right now?
Yeah, I'm like bang in the middle of my training camp right now. To be honest with you, I feel real good. I mean, my fitness and a couple of other things aren't quite at peak yet. But I feel good. If the fight was to happen next week, I could go, man. I really feel good in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, let me ask you, coming into this fight, you know, obviously Anthony is a striker, very similar to yourself. How do you like his style as a fighter?
Oh, I love it. His fight with Barboza was real good. I really enjoyed that, and I've seen some of his previous fights in the WBC. You know, I mean, he's an exciting fighter. He's got some real nice angles. He uses his striking well. He stays composed. He's very good technically. So, you know, I really like to watch his fights.
Yeah, when you look at this fight stylistically, you also being a striker, does that excite you, or does it make you train harder in other areas? Because maybe this fight could go an avenue we don't really think about. You know, could it go to the ground? Could it be a that type of fight?
Hey, it's an MMA fight, so anything can happen. You know, what I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he shot on me or if I needed to shoot on him. So you know, what I mean, it's all part of it. But for the most part, I expect. A striking battle. I think that's where we're both best at, and I think that's what the fans expect. So I'm going to go out there and try to give them an exciting fight.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, as people know, you've had a couple tough losses recently. The fight with Nick Lentz, which, you know, that's not, I don't think that's really your fault, but we won't talk about that. But the fight with Dennis Seaver. With this one, I mean, coming off a couple losses, does it put any more pressure on you in this fight?
Most definitely not, because I've always treated every fight as my most important fight. I've never fought as a fight that you can lose, afford to lose, or want to lose. You know, I mean, you start out at the bottom, you've got to win a fight to get on to take the next step up the ladder and so forth, and you've got to keep climbing that ladder. So there's no fight you can ever afford to lose, even when you become the champion. And, you know, I mean, you got to maintain your belt. You got to keep that status. So, I mean, every fight's your most important fight. So I've always had that mentality. So the pressures are never any different.
Yeah. So now let me ask you, when I referenced that Nick Lentz fight, you know, obviously it was not the most exciting fight in the world. And again, I won't blame you for that. but when you look at fights in the UFC, obviously you want to fight the best guys. But would you rather have a guy like Anthony Njikawani who wants to be exciting and you know, really go out there and make an exciting fight? Or the Nick Lentz style where it's, you know, obviously just doing whatever it takes to get the win? Where do you fall in that mix?
I think somewhere in the middle. Obviously, if you want to stay in the UFC, you got to be exciting, but you got to get the wins most importantly. So obviously, get the wins underneath your belt, but you want to do it in the most exciting fashion that you can do. I mean, obviously, it's the fans that make us what we are. So, you know what I mean? You're out there as entertainment as well. So you got to go out there and entertain them. So it's a bit of both, and obviously I want to win, but at the same time, I don't want to be a boring fighter. I want to go out there and have exciting fights, not just for the fans, but just for myself as well.
Yeah. Would you rather go out there and have a, you know, just a knockdown, drag out, exciting, you know, fight of the year type fight, or a really boring decision win?
Well, it all depends on the outcome, doesn't it? So, yeah, I mean, obviously. I don't know. I guess under the situation, I would like to think I'm the type of person that would go out there and have an exciting fight. I'd prefer to go out on my shield kind of thing. But if I was to go out on my shield or anything like that, but obviously if you needed to take the fight down, or you needed to make it slightly boring, or however you want to see it, I guess you probably would do it, because at the end of the day, when you're putting the headlights and you know, I mean, everyone's watching you, and you're put in that position where it's just you and another guy in the cage, and you could possibly get your ass knocked out, and there's an option there to think, oh, look, let me take him down, or let me stall somewhere. Then, you know what I mean, you probably would do it and think, oh, let me just get the win. So, you know what I mean, I'm just being honest there. I'd like to think that wasn't my type of style of fighting, and I don't think it is, but you never know until you're put in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, to that point, because of the takedowns and the wrestling, again, we expect this to be a great stand-up fight, but obviously, Andre, we know a lot of guys from the UK get that criticism about their wrestling and their takedown defense. How do you battle against that? If you look back at that Nick Lentz fight, I mean, how do you battle against that perception?
The perception of it, I don't think it's quite true. Obviously, we're behind in the wrestling. I don't deny that. I'd say look at it like this. I'm a guy that's never wrestled until I got involved in MMA. Nick Lentz is the kind of guy that's been wrestling since he was in high school. For the most part of the fight, if he did get me down, I was back to my feet. He had a lot of trouble with taking me down. So for a guy that's only had a limited amount of wrestling compared to a guy that's been wrestling for a long time, I did respectably well. I mean, there are some guys that are coming through that are that can hold their own in wrestling. You know what I mean? Like guys like John Hathaway. I mean, you see Bisping taking guys down. So I think that obviously we are slightly behind on the wrestling, but at the same time, I think it's a thing in the media where if someone from the UK was stopping takedowns or getting takedowns, most people wouldn't really acknowledge it. But as soon as, you know, I mean, something bad happens where we get taken down, and then it's another case of bad wrestling from the British. So I think it's a little bit unfair like that. But at the same time, like I said, we do definitely need to work on the wrestling. And I have been doing it. You know, I mean, Paul Daly brings over Kenny Johnson every once in a while, and I've had the chance to train with George St. Pierre as well. So, you know, I mean, we're definitely trying to expand on it.
Oh, you've worked with George?
Yeah, I have done. Leading up to the Koscheck fight, he brought me out to Montreal to work with him. And whenever I get the chance to work with him, I will do. So, you know, I mean, I'm predominantly a striker, but I enjoy my jiu-jitsu and wrestling also.
Yeah. So now let me ask you that, because you train with a great camp in England. I mean, obviously you work with a great team, guys like Paul Daly. But do you ever, I mean, do you like venturing out and training in different places or maybe training in the States? Because I know, you know, Dan Hardy, of course, another teammate of yours, is working a lot right now with Roy Nelson in Las Vegas. Do you like doing that, or do you feel most comfortable at home?
No, most definitely. I like to go out there and experience the other gyms, see what other people have got to offer. I think that's one of the things that I really like about our team. You know what I mean? It's not a team where like guys will hold you back, like say, oh, you can't go and train with this person or you can't go and train with that person. You know what I mean? Dan, he gets along well with Roy, and he goes out there to train with him. You know what I mean? Paul does a lot of stuff in Holland. Ross Pearson, he's out there in San Diego right now over Alliance Gym. I mean, I had a great session out there when I was out in San Diego for the Daily Diaz fight. So, you know what I mean? It's always a great opportunity to go out there and train with different guys. I really enjoy it. And not only that, you get to see another part of the world. Just a good life experience also.
Yeah. So are you a fan of traveling? Do you like traveling a lot?
Yeah, I do like to travel. Obviously, there's no place like home, no matter how bad your home is. There's never no place like home, even the dull English weather. But, yeah, I definitely do like to travel and see different places in the world. It's always a good opportunity.
Yeah, but what's the best part about being at home, though? Is it just being at home, or is there anything, is it just the best part about being home is being home?
I don't know. Obviously, you got your family and friends there, and you got your there's no place like your own house. You know what I mean? You can be put up in the plushest hotel or anything, but when you come back to your home, it's always nice to just feel real comfortable, and you just kind of like just snuggle into your sofa or into your bed. There's no bed that's quite like yours, is there? So it always feels good to come home, but yeah. At the same time, I love traveling and seeing different parts of the world. So I think if you find that balance in the middle, you know what I mean, you'll enjoy it all.
Yeah. So now with this fight, because we mentioned you have so many great strikers at your gym, without giving away any secrets, Andre, do you feel like you have guys that can help you mimic and do the things that Anthony and Jekwani will try to do on July 2nd?
Yeah, most definitely. I've got some good guys to work with out here, and I may even be going over to Holland with Paul Daly over to Mike's gym. So, and I mean, obviously they've got a real high pedigree of kickboxing out there. So, and I mean, I've come across guys like Anthony before, and obviously I've come from like a karate stroke, boxing, kickboxing kind of background. So, it would be nothing new to me. I'm fairly confident that I can get the win on the night.
Yeah. Do you like, I mean, you know, the fact that Anthony throws a lot of, you know, kind of crazy, you know, he's thrown, you know, spinning back kicks and fly, you know, different things like that. You've obviously been able to mix things up as well. Does the air of unpredictability make this fight even more exciting? Because you guys both throw strikes from kind of unexpected places.
Yeah, most definitely. Like I said, he creates some good striking options, and he's got some nice angles. But like I said, it's probably nothing I've never seen before. So I just look at it when I go out to fight. I just look at it like I'm coming up against another good kickboxer. I could be walking into somebody else's gym, it just so happens that I'm fighting in front of millions of people. But I just look at it like, there's a good guy in his gym. I'm going out there. Everyone's talking about this guy, saying he's good. I'm going to go out there and just make an example of him.
Yeah. Now, you've, obviously throughout your career fighting at home in England, it's always nice to have that crowd on your side. We know that Anthony trains and lives out of Las Vegas. Maybe not a Las Vegas guy, but he trains out of there. Is it more fun, or do you mind stepping into the other guy's backyard? Is it a different feeling because you have fought in England so much?
No, not really. I mean, there's not a real big difference. I mean, any fighter will tell you, once the cage door shuts and it's on, I don't really think the crowd affects anybody. So, I mean, I just roll with whichever way it goes. You know what I mean? If I've got a lot of support, then obviously I welcome that support and I get the energy off it. If, for instance, there's a lot of hostility, not that I've ever really experienced a lot of hostility, but if there is anything like that, then I just take it like I've got to take on the world, and it just makes me fight harder anyway. I love being the underdog. You know what I mean? I sometimes thrive on being disliked.
Yeah. So as you talk about, really wanting to get a win in this one and every fight being your most important, is that the kind of attitude you'll carry into this one as well?
Yeah, most definitely. Like I said, man, every fight's your most important fight. So I'm going out there and I'm going to put myself on the line, and I'm gonna fight like it's my last fight.
Absolutely. Well, Andre, again, man, we definitely appreciate the time. We appreciate you taking time for the interview. And before I get you out of here, let me give you a chance for your sponsors, your teammates, anybody you want to give a shout out to. Go right ahead.
Hey, you know what? I just want to thank, obviously, all the fans, all the guys that support me. I want to thank the UFC, obviously, always supporting me and bringing me out there to Vegas, obviously, putting on good fights. Obviously, I want to thank sponsors, Head Rush, Maxi Muscle, Cherry Active, Pits of Sport, Jacko, Venom, Hayabusa. Also, I've got a... I've got a night going on. I suppose this won't really count for the guys in the US, but if it goes out in the UK, I've got a night in Leicester. It's like a pre-fight party, and we've got a man who sings a song, Buzzing, featuring 50 Cent. He's coming over. He's performing in Leicester at Chilli Wright. So if any of the UK fans are listening to this, get yourself over there. And obviously, I want to thank all the guys that I train with over at Rough House.
Absolutely.
Obviously, Fighter Strength as well. That's Ollie Richardson, my coach. Emerson George, my boxing coach. And Victor Estima, my jiu-jitsu coach.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Andre, again, man, we definitely appreciate the time. Safe travels over to Las Vegas. We look forward to seeing you on July 2nd.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Hey, no problem. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, cheers.
Bye-bye.